college or university teachers who've been widely recognized as extraordinarily successful and whose teaching effectiveness has had influence beyond their own institutions. Deborah Tepper Hamo was MAA president in 1991 and 92, 20 years ago. I might just add that Franklin Hamo, who was on the faculty at Washington University when I took calculus there in 1968, encouraged me to persist in that study. It's a regular and delightful MAA custom to invite Hamo winners to speak on pedagogy-related topics of their choice. Alas, one of this year's winners, Matthias Beck, can't be with us, but our other two winners, Frances Sue and Margaret Robinson, are indeed here. We'll hear first from Frances. His approach to teaching, as described in the prize booklet, is to turn students into discoverers and teachers into co-adventurers. Let's hear more about these things and enjoy the adventure directly from Frances.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored to be here, but also very humbled because I know this room is filled with great teachers. And I know that each of you has a rich experience in teaching. So I had to ask myself, is there really anything that I could tell you significant about teaching? So I decided to talk about something else. I want to talk about the biggest life lesson that I have learned. And that I continue to learn. I learn it over and over again. It is deep and profound. It is something that changes the way that I relate to people. It's reshaped my academic career. It constantly renovates the way that I approach my students. And perhaps it'll help you frame your own thoughts about teaching. The beginning of that lesson is this. Your accomplishments are not what make you a worthy human being. Your accomplishments are not what make you a worthy human being. Seems like something easy for me to say, now that I've had some measure of academic success and winning this award. But 20 years ago, I was struggling. I was a grad student seeking validation for my mathematical talent, but flailing in my research, seeking my identity in my work, but discouraged enough to quit. My advisor had even said to me, "You don't have what it takes to be a successful mathematician." That was my lowest point. Weak, weary, my identity and my pride stripped away, my PhD nearly out of reach, I realized then that my self-identity, my work, could not rest on my accomplishments. I didn't have any accomplishments. It could not rest on whether I succeeded or failed in my graduate school career. If I were to continue in mathematics, I could not do it for any of the acclaim that I might receive or the trappings of what the academic world we call success. I should only do it because math is beautiful and I feel drawn to it. In my quiet moments with nobody watching, I still found math fun to think about. So I was convinced that it was my calling, despite the hurtful thing that my advisor had just said. So did I quit? No, I just changed advisors. This time, I chose differently. Percy Diaconis was an inspiring teacher. But more than that, he had shown me a great kindness a couple of years earlier. I was taking a class from him at the time, and that semester my mother died, and I had to ask for an extension on the work. And I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, "I'm really sorry to hear about your mother. Let me take you to coffee." I remember thinking, I'm just some random student. He's taking me to coffee? But I really needed that talk. We pondered life and its burdens, and he shared a little bit of about his own journey. And for me, being in a challenging academic environment with enormous family struggles, to connect with my professor on a deeper level was a great comfort to me. Percy was an inspiring teacher, but this simple act of kindness, of authentic humanness, gave me a greater capacity and motivation to learn from him. Because we had entered into authentic community with each other. And as teacher and student, who were real people to each other. So when the time came to change advisors, I decided to work with Percy, even though it meant completely starting over in a new area. Only in hindsight did I realize why I had gravitated to him. It's because he showed me grace. Grace is good things that you didn't earn or deserve, but you're getting them anyway. By taking me to coffee, Percy had shown me that he valued me as a human being, independent of my academic record. And my worthiness, separated from my performance, gave me great freedom. I could truly enjoy learning again. Whether I succeeded or failed would not affect my worthiness as a human being. Because even if I failed, I know I am still worth having coffee with. Knowing my advisor had grace for me meant that he could give me honest feedback on my dissertation work, even if it was hard feedback, and there were times that he did, without completely destroying my identity. Because as I was learning, my worthiness does not come from my accomplishments. So this is what I call the lesson of grace. Your accomplishments are not what make you a worthy human being. And you learn this when somebody shows you grace. Good things you didn't earn or deserve, but they gave them to you anyway. And I have to learn this lesson over and over again. You can have worthiness apart from your performance. You can have dignity apart from your achievements. Your identity doesn't have to be rooted in your accomplishments. You can be loved for who you are, not for what you've done or not done. You can be loved for who you are, not for what you've done or not done. Somebody just has to show you grace. You are worth having coffee with. Now, the academic world doesn't make it easy to learn this lesson, does it? Especially when so much of academic success depends on achievement, getting good grades, PhD, publishing papers, getting tenure. And we're applauded for those achievements. And when we achieve things, we really feel good about it. We crave that acclamation. So it's tempting to be drawn into this trap. And even now, as I receive this award, I must hold fast to this lesson. I must not cling to this award too tightly. It does not give me dignity. Because if someone showed me grace, I'd realize I already have that dignity. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not saying that achievement shouldn't be rewarded. There is a place for credentials in academia. After all, you wouldn't go to a talk by somebody who didn't have credentials. You wouldn't graduate students who didn't have skills. But achievement in its rightful place is not where we derive our worth. Or our sense of identity. And we need to have a healthy separation between the two. Achievement versus worthiness. Now, if I could really believe this, then it gives me great freedom. Great freedom. Because now I can do math simply because I enjoy it, not because I have to perform or get a PhD or get tenure. I don't have to be the best. I can stop being so hard on myself. I can have a healthy ambition without competition. I can strive towards my goals without having to compare myself to other people. I can be happy for other people's success. I can be appropriately open and authentic. I don't have to fear showing weakness. I don't need to worry about what you guys are going to think about me. I tell you that I just almost failed out of grad school. There's no need for pretense if I believe the lesson of grace. Grace seems simple, but it's such a deep concept. Once you see it, once you recognize it, you begin to see it everywhere. Some might recognize grace as a fundamental part of many of the world's great religions. And that makes sense because at its core, it's a theological concept, making a claim on who we are as human beings and why. In my own personal religious view, I see Jesus as the ultimate giver of grace, endowing all human beings with worth and dignity that they didn't have to earn. But whether you are religious or not, everyone can give, receive, and be drawn to grace and graceful actions and its lessons. Because grace gives people dignity they didn't have to earn. Now, what does this life lesson have to do with teaching? Well, if life is one gigantic learning experience, then you'd expect any life lesson you learn, well, have some effect, should shape our teaching. But the lesson of grace has remarkable implications. And here are some. I want to talk about four ways. It goes from easiest to hardest. Giving grace, understanding grace, communicating grace, and sharing grace. Now, what does it mean to give grace to students? This is actually something that we already all do. Okay, so just think a little bit with me. What do you do when you want to be nice to your students and you want to wake them up at 8 a.m. in the morning? What do you do?
Food.
Yeah, you give them donuts. They didn't have to earn that. That's grace. Except if it's on evaluation day, and then it's a bribe. Here's another way that we show grace to our students, by learning their names. By naming people, you give them dignity. Now imagine the other possibility. Suppose you only learn the names of the people who are getting A's, or the people who are coming to office hours. That's not grace, because it only dignifies the people who have earned it. Spend time with students outside of class. Again, this is grace. It's something they didn't have to earn. And as long as it's not just the best students you're hanging out with, then it's grace. I've often given what I like to think of as fun exam problems, and this is an example of grace. Students can earn some easy points for me on an exam just by doing things like sharing the most interesting thing they learned in the class, a question that they'd like to pursue further, writing a poem about a concept in the course. My students are smiling. Or a question like, imagine you were writing a column in a newspaper called Great Ideas in Math. What would you put in it? This is a graceful question. They really didn't have to earn those points, and they're having fun while doing it. And of course, sharing the joy of mathematics. And this is closely related to what I like to think of is going off on tangents in class about fun ideas. Many of you know I have a collective math fun facts and often teach lower division courses by starting off with fun tidbits of math that has nothing to do with the class that we're talking about. It's just a diversion to show that math is cool and fun and neat. This is actually a graceful action because, you know, going off topic signifies to students that you're showing them something they didn't have to, they don't have to be tested on. You can learn math because it's cool, not because you have to get some through some material that you are going to be tested on. So there's a website, you can Google it, and if you prefer a mobile version, there's an app for that. Second way, understanding grace in our teaching. If we fully understand the lesson of grace, then we'll understand, I don't need to be the center of attention in the classroom, although it's hard not to be a teacher without being drawn to that. I can do experimental things and fail. I can get out of the way of my students. I can open up the classroom for things like inquiry-based learning. I don't have to be in control of everything all the time. I don't have to worry about what people will think of me. Since my performance doesn't define me, I don't have to be the center of attention. I said that already. I'll give you an example of something that recently where all these lessons I had to learn and think about. I had a student a couple years ago who came to me, and he said, "Hey, you know, I've got an idea." This was a student that had taken analysis from me before, and he was writing this online learning platform, and he said, "Would you like to be my first guinea pig?" What I want to do is I want to pair up videos with notes that scroll as you watch the videos and have social sharing and things like that. And I said, "Oh, well, that sounds interesting. What would it involve?" And he said, "Okay, well, we just need to record all your videos and put them on YouTube." And then I hesitated. And then he said, "Well, you know, the other thing would be cool is if we could get the students to use it, and then I could do some experiments." And what he was really suggesting was a radical overhaul of the way that I normally teach the class. I've taught it for 5 years in a row at that point. And there was a part of me that just said, this is getting to be a bit much. But what I realized was that the only hesitation I had for doing this was basically my own fear, right? My fear of losing control, my fear of crazy internet comments. So I decided to do it. And what's interesting is just the unexpected grace that happened as a result. So a lot of students were really happy they're excited about this. They liked the fact that they could watch the videos later. They didn't stop coming to class, which I was worried about. I started getting emails from around the world, people who were in challenging economic situations. They didn't have the resources to go to college, or they didn't even live near a college, but they wanted to learn more mathematics. And for them, the videos were a grace they didn't have to earn. I thought at the beginning of the semester I would just take down the videos at the end of the semester because I was so worried. But I never took them down because I realized they're serving a needed function for the least fortunate in our global community, for people who learn differently. A third way, communicating grace in the struggle. I want to demonstrate to my students that their worthiness does not depend on the grades that they get in my class. Of course, I want to give my C students the same treatment I give my A students, that's for sure. But if I'm really honest with myself, I actually do like A students better than C students. Because they get it. They already speak the same language. But what credit is it to me as a teacher if I only affirm the students who already get it? What credit is that to me as a teacher? It's easy to affirm the student who asks great questions in class, but I have to be very thoughtful about how I affirm the questions from a struggling student, the one who comes from a different cultural background, the one whose educational system did not provide them with the tools they need. I need to think about how I affirm those students. And I like to tell them the struggle is the more interesting place to be, because healthy confusion is where real learning begins, and just like in life, the most meaningful moments, most meaningful life lessons are learned when our afflictions and struggles are greatest. And I want the failing student to understand clearly that grades are just an assessment, not a sentence. Now, I want to be clear. I am not saying grace is simply a recipe. It's not just a feel-good recipe. I'm saying it will help them have a right understanding about themselves. So if my students know in their bones that I have given them dignity apart from their performance, I can have honest conversations with them about their performance. I can judge their work justly and graciously. In fact, a failing a student can be done with grace, so that the student understands their dignity has not been tarnished, even though their work has been justly assessed. Just as a parent can discipline her child if the child knows her love is unconditional. Grace is precisely what makes hard conversations possible and productive between people. But you have to extend the grace first. And one way I try to do that is anytime I'm failing a student, I will try to have them come in, call them in. Sometimes they don't want to, but I'll try to have them come in and talk to them and explicitly articulate the distinction between their grade and their worthiness. The last way, this is probably the hardest, sharing grace in our weakness. I don't mind telling students that I almost didn't make it in graduate school because I understand that my worthiness does not come in my accomplishments. I don't fear that people will think less of me. I know what it means to enter a program with a weaker background than most of my peers, to feel woefully underprepared, to feel misunderstood, to have family pressures that have somehow become paramount, to wonder if I was really cut out for this profession. So I know that weakness can be powerful when a former student shares, "He gave me the most single piece, important piece of advice that I got before heading to graduate school, which greatly shaped how my mathematical career developed. It occurred when I asked him about his grad school days, which, surprising as it may be, did not go very smoothly for him. He confessed to me that at one point he considered dropping out. The lesson he learned was to pick an advisor you can thrive with, even to the sacrifice of a particular project or subject. And I took this advice to heart. As a result, I thrived in grad school, which has directly resulted in my early career success." This was a student who wasn't the top student in MUD, but he chose a PhD program where he thrived. He entered an NSF postdoc afterwards, and he's just finishing that now. I don't mind talking with students who are having serious family issues about losing both of my parents to terminal illnesses and telling them it's okay to let your academic work suffer, because as human beings, they aren't defined by their academic work. I don't mind telling my students with emotional issues that it's okay to see a counselor, because I've seen a counselor. With a struggling student, showing weakness is extending and sharing grace. I'm validating their worthiness in our shared struggles. They don't have to perform well to earn my respect. And sometimes showing weakness enables us to receive grace from our students. One of the nicest things a student ever said to me came when my father was dying of cancer. This is my first year at Harvey Lent. And I was flying back and forth to Texas multiple times to tend to his care. And it was surely disruptive to see a different professor every day. There was a point in the semester where they had seen the professor, other professors, more than they'd seen me. And so I confessed to my class that I had two roles, as a son and as a teacher. And I felt like I was doing neither of those roles well. And one of my students said, so gently, "Should I be terminally ill later in life, I want my son to act as you have." Grace from my student. I didn't need to perform well to earn his respect. This is the lesson of grace. Your accomplishments are not what make you a worthy human being. You learn this lesson by receiving grace, good things you didn't earn or deserve, but you're getting them anyways. So this is my hope, that you could receive and give grace. We're so trained by our accomplishment-driven culture to believe that our deeds are what make us worthy of honor and respect. And to fight this, you have to surround yourself with grace givers, people who are good at it. All the best teachers in my life have been grace givers. Think of that teacher whom you knew was busy but still made time for you as if you were the most important person in the world. Think of those people whom you could be authentic with. The one who, if they knew all the rotten things about you, they would still love you anyways. The ones around whom you feel Sure, good instruction techniques are necessary for good teaching, but they're not sufficient. They're not the foundation. Grace-filled relationships are the foundation for good teaching, because it allows you to have freedom to explore, freedom to fail, letting students take control of their own learning. Grace amplifies the student-teacher relationship to one of greater trust in which a student can thrive. The community that Parker Palmer talks about here is not possible without grace. So, you know, I like to think that when students think of my teaching, that I'm a clear lecturer, I choose the best examples. But that's an accomplishment-driven thinking. And when you ask them, what students often most remember are those moments of grace. Last year, and I'll close with this, a student at Harvey Mudd was asked to give a senior lunch speech to the parents. And he chose to talk about his experience at Harvey Mudd. And with his permission, I'm sharing this. It's from a math major named Simeon. What he said to the parents was this: the one class that best embodies the essence of Harvey Mudd College was a class called Real Analysis. In Real Analysis, I learned to question the very definition of real numbers and everything I knew about mathematics. What do you mean I have to prove how to add two real numbers? Proof by common sense and elementary education were strictly prohibited. Real Analysis was perhaps the hardest class I've taken in my first experience of struggling in math. I wasn't getting the concepts as quickly, and I couldn't help feeling incompetent, a subject that I always felt confident in. The gateway to math never felt so narrow for an incompetent student like me. Fortunately, there's more to this story. During that semester, I was doing a book study with Professor Sue. I was reading a book with a student that had nothing to do with math. And I was uncomfortable. Sitting before me was a super smart, incredible professor. Yes, I like that. And I felt really unworthy to hang out with him because I wasn't doing so well, and I thought I might disappoint him once he got to know me personally. But at our last meeting, he said, "I want students to understand that professors don't value students based on their academic performance." To hear that from my own professor, who I really love and admire, at a time when I felt ashamed of my intelligence, that I wasn't just a student in the seat, not just a grade on a transcript, but a valuable person who he wants to know, was perhaps the most incredible moment in my college career. And that's the kind of place Harvey Mudd was. Yes, Simeon, you get it. You understand the transformational power of grace. And my hope for all of us is that we would understand grace in all its forms and how it can transform our teaching. Not only will it inspire our students, it will inspire us. Just like my students, the moments I best remember from my own teaching, the grace-filled moments I have shared with my students and my colleagues and my former teachers, many of whom are here today. And I want to thank them because I didn't deserve those blessed moments. They gave them to me anyways. Thank you very much.